give you the balanced to unbalanced conversion at the kilowatt level from 160 meters to 10 meters. It's all there. It's on the shelf at MFJ. It's one of the subcomponents of a MFJ 989D. Repeat the model number. I think it's 989D. So as long as I get the parts list for that and order the right part, most of my problem goes away, if I hear you correctly, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what it's the MFJ 989D. You can find the parts of the catalog for it online, and also get and you can order that part specifically. And I'd also like to say that MFJ makes another tuner that's like a 2,500 watt beast that where basically you could get the toroid out of that one and the dummy load resistor. There's a lot of cool parts. But there again, I preferred and I opted out to buy the whole tuner itself because I find it as a nice tuning tool, a nice evaluation tool that I have here in the shack, along with the antenna analyzer from MFJ. Between those two things, and then a lot of times I'll go down and I'll actually build my own specific balun for the circuit. But just to get my feet wet in with the antenna and get everything going, I use that to kind of get me in the ballpark and see how things are going. Because I can adjust a lot of things out very, very quickly with that, if you know what I'm saying. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Hey, Glenn, awful glad you signed in tonight. You gave us an awful lot of good information. We got 1 minute to go before the bewitching hour. You guys are listening to TechNet number 1251. Every Sunday night since 1980, almost every Sunday night since 1982 in September. Crazy people. As long as they stay healthy, they think they're going to be back next week. Be kind to each other. Bye-bye, you all. I'm going to send it back to Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. Got some other questions that was sort of attached to this ZIP. And we'll pick up on it next week. I'll make a note here to continue. So, as Dick says, God willing, everything goes right this week, and we will be back here next week and do it again. Real great. Enjoy it, I'm sure. Get a lot of great information, especially Glenn. Thank you very much for your input tonight. 73s, everybody. This is K2KEY.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
I kid you not, Sunday night, and this is no exception, the cat came in here for the tech net. I don't know why he does that.
Jingles knows quality when he sees it, Rich.
Apparently, Dick, his food, his toys, is downstairs in the living room, which is where he stays all week. Sunday night, he comes up here, go figure.
Okay, remind me next week to tell you why my cat is here also. My daughter gave me the explanation. I'll make a note of that next week and I'll tell you why.
The time is 12 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Reflector 9126, link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel 6.
Testing WA2CBL. Test 1234. Test 1345.
Test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Test 1, 2.
test 1234. W-H-2-CBO, test 1345. Test 1234-5, W-H-2-CBO, test 1234.
Okay, K2RIW, WA5VJB. Dick, are you still around?
MHYY, I think you signed off about 7 minutes ago.
I understand, but this was the first time the system dropped enough that I could try and hit it.
It's amazing you can't find an RLP node to get into this system with, because this Echolink system you're trying to get in with is very antiquated.
I am completely open to suggestions, over.
Build your own IRLP node.
Do you have a number?
Absolutely. Go to www.irlp.net. Look at the website. They'll tell you how to order the boards, how to build the thing, and everything else you need to know about it, the whole system. This thing is connected to the reflector channel, 9126, and if you had an IRLP node, you could talk along with everybody else that comes in from the IRLP, like I am coming in right now. Trying to get in with Echolink, like you're trying to get in with, is going to be a pretty big waste of time, because the transmitter out of East hardly ever drops during the TechNet. WHYBJB to WHYY. Did you copy that transmission from before?
There we go. The noise in the background kept kicking the system up, so it would not time out. www.irlp.net. And which repeater would I look for?
Well, the website in itself will have to tell you, explain to you all about the IRLP system, what it takes to build a node, and you'll also be able to look at the information page and look at what's connected to where as far as the reflector status and node status. But if you read the whole page and start at the beginning, you'll get a pretty good idea what the whole thing's all about.
I guess I was wondering which system was connected to it, because I do not know what repeaters they're using.
I'm not certain of the question you're trying to ask here.
Not going through a repeater, you're going through the internet on a node.
Got part of that. You said I'm not going through the repeater, I'm going through the, and I didn't get the rest of that. So, what system would I be getting into?
When you have an IRLP node connected on the system and constructed and connected to the IRLP system, you can dial and talk to any IRLP node that's out there. That doesn't block you, of course, which you wouldn't have any reason to. And you can also get on any reflective subchannel and listen in and talk on it. If you go to the page I told you, you'll be able to read everything about it from start to finish. It explains the whole system, where it started from, who runs it and so forth, and how to construct your own node, and what you use for radios, transceivers, that you connect to the node. That's the actual RF interface.
How does an RF interface help me when I'm about 1,300 miles away?
You have cable service at your house?
Something about cable service. No, I do not have cable service.
Do you have DSL service available at your house?
Do you own a cell phone?
I'm trying to answer your questions intelligently.
I'm not getting everything you're saying. It's just words here and there. I've known Dick Nagel for quite a few years. I've worked with him on a large number of projects. I supply him with many of the prototype antennas he turns around and patents. Thought I would occasionally say hello on the net. I've occasionally listened to it on the downloads. Interestingly, last week's is not available as a download. But this was the one they suggested to get into. In order to get into it, you're recommending IRLP.net and an RF link, which confuses me greatly. I have worked all 50 states on 2 meters, but Texas to Long Island is not a reliable path. Over.
When you build an IRLP node of your own, it has an RF interface which you talk into it from the air that goes into the node and it goes on the internet. You're not talking 1,500 miles if the node is in your house. You're talking from you to your house. That's why I asked you if you have cable service. If you don't have cable service, you need something like DSL service. It really won't work over dial-up modem type of service. CDL to me, 2-1-1. Is that you testing on the other repeater?
Internet, why do I need the RF link?
How do you propose to talk into the node without an RF interface?
The way I am right now. I am sitting in front of a computer. I have a USB microphone going directly into it. And talking to you via Echo Link from Texas to the into STU repeater in Long Island.
Hello, Kent. K2J. You're actually not talking to into STU. Doesn't have a repeater. All you've got is a little radio that's connected to a computer that transmits to the Selden machine. If you put an IRLP node in your house, you can't like hook a microphone up to it and a speaker and go that way. It's designed to hook to a radio. If you read the IRLP page, you'll see what it's all about and how it was created and why it was created. And you could put a single frequency node in your house and use an HT and dial up any of 1,000 different repeaters around the world. WA5BJB, KE2J.
KE2J, WA5BJB. Well, what I'm trying to understand is why do I have to have a walkie-talkie talk to a radio and then the radio is connected to the DSL link when it seems like you'd be able to hook up the computer directly to the DSL? I don't understand why I've got to make a walkie-talkie talk to another radio 10 feet away and then have that talk to the DSL.
Okay, well, the concept is that this system is protected by only having radios on it. The computers are protected with SSH and PGP, which get some pretty good keys. And that was the concept, so if you want to break the concept, somebody finds you out, they turn you off. That's basically the way it works. It's just, you know, follow the rules and have a good time.
Okay, and then I'm trying to understand how that's going to be better than what I'm doing right now.
Okay, number one, the audio codec is far superior than what you're using right now. Number two, it gives you, well, you may not be interested in talking anywhere else except to hear. It also allows you to participate a little better. I'm trying to get the guy who has this radio that you're using at the moment to change it to a radio that has TL the code. Then you won't have to wait for the damn carrier to drop before you can key up. So It's little things like that. The IRLP is a better system. You've got a whole bunch of nodes around you. All you're going to do is listen to them and just see what they do. Actually, I think a couple of them that you'll have there are ganging together with like about 50 or 100 other repeaters around the world.
Ah, there we go. Interesting delay. Let's see. Right now it says, it gave me a list here of how many thousand repeaters are set up here on Echo Link at the moment. It's an interesting concept. It certainly seems like it's doing it totally backwards. Of course, there to get onto Echo Link, I had to fax a copy of my ham license to general commander of Echo Link. WA5 Victor, Juliet Bravo for ID purposes.
WA5 VJVK2J. Well, can't use Echo Link from your car. Actually, you can if there's an Echo Link node while you're driving around. Most people don't have to deal with a computer. They just know that there's a node that they can use, and they dial the four digits of where they want to talk to, and that's that while they're driving down the highway. Echo Link is fine for what Echo Link is, and, you know, that's good enough for some people.
7DC, but where's the radio?
I was going to tell him about, I know Chip, the guy who was on the Tonight Show doing the CW demonstration. He's worked with us on several projects over at CQ Communications. The Guinness Book of Records for texting, as they like to call it there, is 26 words a minute. That's the Guinness Book of Records, is 26 words a minute. And of course, extras have to be able to beat 20, so the texters had no idea what they were getting into. And also, Dick would find it amusing, they used a 432 megahertz sideband with a pair of little Yaesu 817s.
Okay, well, that sounds like fun. There's a lot of different ways to go. Anyway, I gotta get out of here. Time to go to sleep so I can go to work in the morning. WA5BJB, have a pleasant evening. Nice to speak to you. KE2J.
KE2J, WA5BJB. Okay, 2 weeks ago was the June VHF contest, and we fired up the TV Channel 2 down here again. Made an awful lot of contacts on 6 meters. That was fun. But we may get to do it one more time, but as soon as they can get a tower crew in, all that's coming down. They're at a little over $10,000 a month tower rent. They're kind of motivated to get those antennas down. K2EJ, WA5BJB. Good night for me. Good morning for you.
All right, Kent. Just so you know, the station, my station that moved back to Channel 13 VHF, I think we got like about 3,000 or 4,000 phone calls on the first day. And as the guy who's the chief engineer of that station, the local FCC guy, and the chief engineer from another station went into a bunch of places, and they're pretty much discovering that New York City, you know, VHF just doesn't penetrate the building.
Well, I broke out the spectrum analyzer and went, what? We got four stations on VHF down here. I thought we were only going to have two, but we ended up having four. So we actually had one of the UHF 52s move back to Channel 9, of all places. So I had to hook up the spectrum analyzer and take a look and see what all they were doing with shuffling around there. And several of the full power analogs stayed on for another week, but they just had a loop running. Here's how to hook up your converter. E2EJ, WA5BJB.
WA5BJB, K2J. Yeah, we've got Channel 13, we've got Channel 11, we've got Channel 7. Channel 9 chose to stay on the UHF, and... there's a big difference. Actually, where you guys are, I mean, you don't have the kind of density that we have in New York City. I mean, you've got density, but it's in a different form. And I think VHF actually works really well with outdoor antennas and going long distances, more so than the UHF does. But in the big city, which is reflection central, and the amount of energy that passes through some of these cement buildings is not like you can do on UHF. UHF beats the pants off of it.
So we've got 6, 8, 9, and 11 on VHF, and then somewhere around 25, can we use the term transmitters, not rather than stations, running in the UHF band. And about 7 or 8 are low power analog still on, and the VHF does travel quite well. My next headache is going to be trying to find out where we can get cowboy games again. That was when I originally had to learn how to make really big Yagis and filters and everything, was when Dallas was playing at the Irving Stadium. Excuse me, were playing at the Cotton Bowl. They never sold out the Cotton Bowl. And so we had to put up big antennas so we could get the Dallas Cowboy games. That was kind of spoiled for the last 20 years. Now they got that big super stadium, which they're not going to sell out either. So I got to find out what TV station about 100 miles away is going to be transmitting the football games, and start designing some big Yagis and gas preamps and a fair number of filters. Over.
Yeah, well, watch out with the preamp. Preamps are a source of trouble. As you well know, that the dynamic range of the noise is incredible, and you know what you see on the spectrum analyzer, you can't change the bandwidth to see the whole thing. But DXing digital is quite interesting. You have to know where you're going, or at least have a tuner that lets you dial directly. I tend to use a spectrum analyzer, peak it, and then make the receiver go there. And you know, I'm in New York. I've picked up stations in Maine, Boston.
Oh, completely understand. A couple of weeks ago, I was watching Pinky and the Brain coming out of Florida on digital television. We had a nice opening across the Gulf there. Now, if you look at the ARRL handbook for the 80s or the 90s, I'm the one who did the gas fed preamps in there. So I fully understand the IP3 challenges. Over.
Oh, you of all people would. there's some magic in this. I mean, it's, I was talking to the guy who actually designed the transmitter. He's the chief engineer of, I guess what they used to be known as Carmarthy's Palace. Now they were Grass Valley. I think now they're calling themselves Thompson or whatever. You know, the issues there in terms of making the switch from analog to digital and still using that same bunch of IoTs and the way you generate the signal and having enough headroom, unless you change the driver amps to a little more, you know, actually they use Class A amplifiers in the analog. They actually change them to AV1s when they go to digital to make the tube, you know, to operate the tube in efficient range. It's a matter of where you put the bottom.
Yeah, I used to work for RDI Electronics up in Valhalla, New York, and they made about a quarter of a million TV antennas a year, the majority of which were my designs. Also knew Neil Turk, God, what a jerk, and did three of the Turk antennas. Also, I think we've mentioned I'm on the Consumer Electronics Association Standards Committee for DTV reception, and 4 years ago, demonstrated a smart antenna for high-definition TV at the NAB show. It could be commanded to 32 different patterns, and was working with ATI down there out of the Philly area, They were doing the chips, we were doing some of the smart antennas and have to talk to each other. And it would go through the 32 patterns and pick out the one it liked the best. And we weren't really looking for signals of noise, although that was part of the search. Primarily, they were looking for the pattern where the equalizer was doing the least amount of equalizing.
Bowen equalizer, not the decision equalizer. The feed Bowen equalizer is too small. I can't remember the guy's name, but there's a guy from Bowen, actually. He's one of their main engineers. He actually designed a system that put the QAM on the lower part of the visual carrier and the oral carrier of an analog transmitter to transmit data to a set-top box that had movies. It was something that was called Movie Beam. It was started by Disney. They gave it up and sold it to Hollywood Video, and they killed it. But he designed this it was a UHF only, but it was an active antenna that would actively change its pattern and take information back from the equalizer to figure out how to equalize it the best and put the appropriate cancellations and reflections in to cancel out the multipath that was going there. The thing worked very, very nicely, but it was demonstrated at NAB for 2 years and then it disappeared.
Well, more than anything, we were doing null steering so that we would essentially steer the null onto what the interference was. Also worked with a company out there in California called iBlast, who was doing pay-per-view services as tag-along channels with the APS-B signal. Oh, yes, fun and games. Remember when Channel 9 went on? God, it's hard to believe Channel 9's been on the air for 10 years down here now. And, of course, we will totally skip over the OFDM APS-B debate. Hi.
Well, you know, in Europe, the DVB-T, which is COFDM, actually. But this service area is a lot smaller. I mean, APS-B is a cool system in terms of, you know, saving energy. To try and duplicate the same type of grade A or grade B that you get with an analog, doing it in COFDM, it's going to cost you one heck of a lot of electricity. But you don't have any multipath problems, that's for sure. You got other things, impulse noise, some other stuff bothers it. You don't realize it, but the helicopters, microwave, and most of the ENT microwave COFDM. And you should talk to some of your ENG boys and listen to them curse a little bit. So it's not that good a system, but the reality is, what was it, in 2002, I was doing encapsulated IP data inside the DTV stream, based on the ATSC paradigm that you create a minor node over 100, there's a descriptor that you load up, and it knows the data, and it treats it as such. And actually, we created a data system for the New York City Fire Department, New York City OEM, that actually took all the hundreds of nodes and filtered all of that down. It wound up getting transmitted in a data stream as a digital signal, and being used by any number of portable command centers to create the complicated data displays. I mean, some of the stuff that they're doing now is silly, but, the proof of concept is what I was involved in.
Oh, yeah. I've been to Europe enough times. I'm familiar with the system over there. And one little Vespa motorcycle going down through an English village shuts down all the television sets. Oh, OFDM does not like impulse noise. Been working with a company out of San Francisco. They're doing what you can best call a noise blanker chip, specifically for COFDM. And the objective here is that if I hit the TV set, the modulator, with that noise pulse, it takes quite a while for it to go back and sort of reset and resync. So these guys are far, far faster acting. find the noise pulse, blanket very similar to a vintage ham radio noise blanker, but tell the chip I'm blanking you at the moment, and it recovers fast enough that normally the data stream is not broken.
HBSB, we have the trellis. Every 3 bits, every symbol really breaks down into being 3 bits. But and still FDM, you know, you're thinking of dodge and carry. As long as you don't muck up where the sync word is, you're safe. But the reality is, there's an ECC. There's another form of error correction, not only at the RF side, but once you actually get down to data. So impulse noise tends to really mess things up, but with some of the ECCs that they have, you can recover from it pretty well.
Yeah, but they did give up with the 8,000 carrier and went back to 2,000 carrier over most of England.
No, I know what you're saying. The more dense it is, I mean, the more points you have on your constellation, it's a little crazier it gets in terms of its behavior and nature. But, you know, the enhanced convolution coding that they use is pretty resilient. I mean, you can lose a lot of it, and it'll still reconstruct it.
Well, their headache was when you did lose it, it took a long time to lock back up. I know in the field test they did around here, they found that COFDM did go further than 8VSB. However, the specification was that COFDM runs 3 dB more power than 8VSB, and when they cranked up the 8VSB 3 dB, it won the range test. So, half a dozen one or the other.
Now, COFDM, you can really think of more as peak energy. I ran a 60 kilowatt AM transmitter, literally, you know, video transmitter. Each one of those cabinets would generate about 30 kilowatts. I converted to 8VSB. Those cabinets will put about between 7 and 10 kilowatts out. If I converted to COFDM, I'd be lucky if I get 5.
Ah, you're learning all about the little crest factors, huh? Yeah. One thing we also found out on playing with the TV antennas when we were doing some of the early exhaustive searches is you could make changes in the preamp gain of just a few tenths of a dB and see 6 to 8 dB improvement in the detected signal. And a couple of things were happening. One, we were cranking up as much gain as we could before we created IP3 problems, although in this case, since we were just simply making the chip happy, we didn't always know what was happening. But the other thing we were finding was those A to B converters in there had sweet spots, and we could change signal levels up or down in just very minor ones, and suddenly the thing would start working a hell of a lot better.
No, I can see that exactly. I did some experiments with APSD. You know, the way signal and noise is measured is not your normal way of thinking in terms of digital, but they have a value for ATSD, and that's 27 dB. So, but I can get my transmitter to stay within the FCC mask, and I can get the damn thing up in there 40. Now, I can take a receiver, run an antenna that's about 40 miles away that's perfectly pointed. I can pad the thing down and operate a transmitter at 27 dB and bring it to the point where the receiver unlocks. I can then leave that attenuation in there from an RF point of view, not a signal noise point of view. Bring the signal noise up to around 39 or 40, the receiver comes up and it's very happy.
Well, 10 years ago, ATI, who was, you know, developing the chips at that time, gave me one of their development receivers, and it would throw out a screen where it showed me what the signal-to-noise ratio was in each stage of the detector, the quality of all of the individual hard it was working, and more importantly, would display to me the equalizer pulse. So that was where we go back and look at different antenna designs where we're making the equalizer not work as hard, yet at the same time see it. So I used to joke for several years there, I could tell you everything you wanted to know about the APS-B bitstream, but I had no idea what the picture looked like.
Yeah, well, you know, she's got an awful lot of 188 bytes packets running around. And, yeah, we got one stream rate. Of course, unless you're overflowing, which a lot of people do, which they don't realize. But, with today's test, statistical multiplexers, those problems, those overflow problems usually don't happen. But, one of the things about, the digital that people don't realize is that, you know, it ain't video. It's just a bunch of coefficients being thrown at you. So, but APS-B is an interesting animal. The biggest problem today is the equalizers that have outputs that you can see with taps are being lit up. They're still only third generation equalizers, and I've been constantly looking for a fifth generation chip that has monitoring, but that hasn't happened yet, so, you know, you're at a disadvantage in terms of seeing what the new equalizers do, because they have a bigger feed forward section, and they can handle a little more pre-ghosting, and they work better, but, it's probably going to be a little while yet before we see a fifth generation equalizer where we can actually see what the heck's going on.
Let me to worry why.
I don't know if it's first or second generation DTV converter. It was originally made for one of the pay TV services. And together. That got kind of annoying, so I broke down and got one of the $40 converters. it was the other station, W5VJB and KE2VJ.
Yeah, I was just listening here on the MT net and my ROP node. Eric, KE2AJ, how much power is channel 13 running compared to channel 7? Because channel 7 has a significantly stronger signal out here by me than channel 13 does.
Is that all the time, or is that like tonight?
That's pretty much all the time. I'm not talking about reading off the S-meter, the level meter on the converter. I'm talking about reading on the S-meter on my R7000, hooked on to the same signal lead as going to my converter. I took it off the input in the R7000. It's a good couple of units difference between their carrier at 174.309.4 and yours is 210.309.4. That's what I'm looking at in narrow FM mode. There's a significant difference in the carrier level.
Yeah, actually we just did a proof of performance on the transmitter. The pilot's about 12 hertz off. It's in the plus direction too. Understand that ABC, channel 7, they have, I don't think they'll have it on UHF. Anyway, they're in the lower part of the Empire Vast, and 13's in the upper part. I think 7 is running 15 kilowatts ERP, transmitter TBL, and it's something like, 35 kilowatts of DTV output, and 13 is running 2.4 kilowatts of TPO and something like 9 kilowatts ERP.
So you're saying they're running 13 kilowatts on the DTV signal for channel 7, and you're running 9. That's not that much of a difference.
Oh, is your antenna on?
Your signal is breaking up in the repeater a little bit, too.
Hang on a second.
Much better, much louder audio, too. If I caught it right, they're higher, but you're running 9 kilowatts ERP. Is that correct? And channel 7 is running 13 kilowatts ERP, and they're on lower antennas? No, it is not. Okay, I also noted the same thing on monitor antenna, which is vertically polarized. I know it's the wrong polarization, but that showed a very similar difference between the two signal levels.